We are back here at the Predlines podcast. As usual, myself, Michael Wade, being joined by co-experts Corey Francis and George Mataringis. Corey, you know, I always lead in here with some weather talk. It's been all over the place here in Nashville. We had 80 degrees, and then we had kind of tornadoes last night, which is a little wild. Other than that, though, how are you hanging in there?
Doing all right. Been enjoying a nice weekend. It was rather nice on Friday and Saturday with some good temps and everything. And but then last night got a little bit scary with the weather. But we're good and we're rocking and rolling here.
Right on. And George, a couple miles up north. How you doing?
It's cold. It's still cold. Excited for it not to be cold anymore. But you know, living the life, doing things.
No tornadoes, by my guess.
Yeah. Hey, that's good, right? I think.
Yeah. It's been a while since we last did one of these episodes, which is my fault. I've been traveling around, but glad to be back. Glad to be plugged back into Predators hockey. It's been a little bit of a roller coaster recently, but I'm putting up some good results lately. Just in the past week, the Preds have won four straight, beating the Senators, the Red Wings, the Sharks, and then the Blues on a Sunday morning game. One of the stranger puck drops I've ever seen, but I won't complain. It's nice to have a shutout win under your belt before, you know, really lunchtime was over. So that was interesting. And I'll admit, we can start with just very briefly going over the Senators game, which I'll admit I did not even watch. I was kind of in transit at the time. So I guess I'll just turn it over to Corey. Did you follow this game at all? Anything that really stuck out to you? Obviously, Nashville getting the 5-2 victory, which is always good.
Yeah, what stuck out to me was they finally were starting to get through on the power play. It seemed like instead of just doing the standard, I know we've been kind of calling it the vanilla drop pass back, it's been actually going a little, maybe cutting ahead a little bit more. We saw Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis both score power play goals, which was nice seeing the team cut through there. It had kind of been a weak spot for a while. And then Arvidsson, I think he started a nice little streak there of scoring and goals in three straight games. He didn't score today, unfortunately, but he had a good goal there. Actually, two goals in that game, and that really started to kind of spark the offense a little bit more. I thought they played rather well. It wasn't a complete game, but they played rather well in that game versus the Senators. So it was good. It was good to watch.
Yeah, I'm just looking at kind of the stats breakdown anyway. It was pretty even as far as shot generation. Looks like both teams were pretty successful at getting chances, kind of creating chances anyway. The Senators did have the advantage in the high danger areas, but you know, Nashville seems to make that sort of their strategy anyway, just to get outplayed in that area. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but you know what, they're getting the wins and have been for some time, so it's hard to argue against it. But as you said, the power play has definitely been one of my biggest headaches this year. One of my biggest gripes with this team is just how predictable and flat the power play really looks, in spite of it being, as they still say, the best home power play in the league, which I have trouble believing. But yeah, like you mentioned, maybe changing it up a little bit later in the season and getting it done. And George, anything you noticed from this Ottawa game? Obviously, the Senators, not the strongest of opponents this time of year, but still good to get that win anyway.
My biggest takeaway was that Pecorine is a better goaltender at the moment than Craig Anderson. Just looking from the high danger chances, the Predators gave up 16, but got 11 of their own, which, like, 11's good. That's a good number to get, but you can't give up 16 at any given night and think that you're going to win. The only difference is that the Predators actually scored on two of their high danger chances at 5-on-5, whereas the Senators were blanked. So, that's pretty good.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, if you were to look at the kind of this season breakdown of the Predators and not look at the scores of the games, you would really think they were getting out beaten in a lot of these games, just with the, like you said, allowing 16 5-on-5 high danger chances is usually not a recipe for victory. But this team is sort of defying, as you said. I mean, it's really just been the Pecorine show lately, putting up a well above average save percentage in that area, as well as UC Saros. So Nashville goaltenders really getting it done. The next game is a rematch. I guess these were back-to-back games, I believe. A rematch against the Red Wings, who kind of upset Nashville earlier in the week. This one I was a little more plugged into, but still not able to watch live. I know that the Preds were up, I think, 3-1 pretty late, and then kind of let the Wings crawl back to just a one-goal defeat. Corey, obviously nice to get, you know, the revenge anyway, and seemed like Mrazek might have been the kryptonite for Nashville, and he had left between those games. So maybe this version of the Red Wings Nashville has a little better luck against. But what did you take away from this game?
You know, that first period, it seemed like the Predators came out playing great hockey. You know, they won the shot battle. They were up on the high danger chances, 8-2, just in the first period, and had two great goals to start off the game. You know, with who scored the first one? Yeah, Hartnell and Turris. Both. I mean, to see Hartnell score in a few consecutive games here has been rather nice, and see Turris actually notch a goal as well for that second line. He's been kind of on a drought himself lately, finding the back of the net. But you know, the first period they came out and they just kind of took control of the game. In the second and third period, they really allowed, especially at 5-on-5, they really allowed the Red Wings to really make a comeback. I mean, I think the second and third period, yeah, the second period, the Corsi four for the Red Wings was a 62, and then a 60 in the third period at 5-on-5. So it's just showing the opportunities that are going towards the net. And so the defense is letting, the defense for the Predators was letting people get closer to the net, high danger chances, 4-4 in the second period, 6-4 Red Wings in the third. So really put some pressure on the goaltending at that second game with Saros there. So, maybe they were tired, but it's still nice to have that win.
Yeah, and it was kind of almost the opposite of the Senators game, and it was pretty even for kind of the possession numbers. Nashville got slightly outplayed at 5-on-5 just in terms of purely generating shots, but in this case they did win the high danger battle. So, you know, that's kind of the performance I would rather have. I don't mind allowing you know, the shots from the perimeter and the blue line that rarely have a chance of getting in, if they can try to shut down that high danger area. That's what I would rather see, but you know, Nashville kind of showing us that they get it done regardless. And George, this the second matchup against the Red Wings in that week, anything that really grabbed your attention from that result?
Both teams weren't really playing great defense, especially in front of the high danger areas. I mean, you take a look at the heat map, and the main difference is that the Predators actually had 3 goals from the high danger chance or high danger area, whereas the Red Wings only had 2. Otherwise, I don't think that anyone really stuck up for me on the Predators. I thought Ryan Johansson had a good game, but not a great one, really. And I thought he stood out as one of the better players on either team. Otherwise, yeah, it's I don't know. It was kind of just a tough game for me to watch, just because I felt like this was a game that the Predators should have just stomped the Red Wings, and they continually let them back in the game.
Yeah. As usual, somewhat matching the skill level of their opponents. But speaking of Predators stomping teams, and we'll kind of speed it up here just so we can get to the trade deadlines kind of stuff. The two games I was able to watch this week were the 7-1 win against the Sharks. Of course, Pecorino picking up win number 300, becoming just the 34th NHL player to do so, and I believe the third winningest Finnish goaltender of all time, and closing in on even that number one spot.
It's no easy to keep herself.
Yes.
My love for him.
The Sharks kind of showed some signs of life in the second. I think the closest the game came to, yeah, so George, our resident Sharks fan, is going to scoff at anything I try to compliment the Sharks with. Bringing the margin of loss down to just one goal, but then Nashville just opened the floodgates in the third period, putting up 7-1 as a final score. It's really hard to criticize anything about this performance. I think Pecorino did have to make some pretty deceivingly very good saves. A lot of deflections coming right in front of net that he was able to react quickly enough and get the glove on or the pads. So Rene did very well to earn that 300th win, I believe. Offensively, everything Nashville tried worked. It just all clicked, which is very rare to see, and also very nice to see. Some very beautiful goals. Almost everyone on the team, it seemed like, getting up on the score sheet. I believe every single player on the Predators registered a shot on goal, and very nearly all of them registered a point. So It's nice to see the whole team chipping in and getting it done. Corey, maybe just one thing you took away from this blowout against the Sharks.
Every player on the Predators team had a shot, and only the fourth line and Kyle Turris plus the last defensive pairing. So I think, you know, the first line, the second line, all the third line, the first two pairings of defense all had some sort of point. So it's almost a total team contribution.
Yeah. And it seems like once, you know, when everyone on the team is plugged in and focused, I mean, this team is pretty damn near unbeatable. The Sharks, you know, they've kind of been a little iffy this year. They're definitely on the decline as far as kind of a broader look at their past seasons. But still, I believe, second overall in the Pacific Division, which is sort of a strange one this year with Vegas off to the races. But anyway, always good to beat the Western Conference opponents, especially the ones that are up in the playoff hunt. And George, without being too critical of your San Jose Sharks, maybe one thing you took away from this one.
It's really weird. Over the past few years, whenever I think about the San Jose Sharks or I hear their name or whatever, I hear like those opening chords from Hurt by Johnny Cash. And I think that perfectly describes like how I felt about this game, where after like 10 minutes into the third period, I just kind of stopped like watching. I turned on the Avalanche and Oilers, I think, which I was like, oh, this game kind of sucks too. But from what I saw from this game, it was really good. The Predators played great. They limited the Sharks to only chances to the outside. They continually got high danger chances. I believe that they had like 11, but they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 goals from the slot or lower, in at 5-on-5 even strength. So that's 5 out of 7 from that high danger area, which is, you know, exactly what you want. If they play like this for the rest of the season into the playoffs, I mean, they might win the cup in 16 games, you know, like,
yeah,
I mean, they were just incredible. We'll see what happens. Otherwise the players that I really liked the most, at the fourth line was on fire. PK Subban was having another dominant night. Watching him and Mark Edward Vlasic go back and forth playing defense was really fun to watch, especially just as a pair of shutdown defenders. I thought the Jofa line kind of got shut down by Vlasic, but that's pretty much what happened to the Couture line by Subban. So it was a fun kind of nerdy game to watch.
Yeah. Especially for Mark Edward Vlasic's number one fan, which is of course you, George Mataringis.
Yep.
And then earlier, as we're recording on Sunday evening, earlier today, the Blues in town on national television on real NBC, which I thought when I was looking around the channels, I thought maybe someone had messed up and not actually aired the game. But then I discovered, shockingly, it was on Big Boy NBC. So always nice to put up a performance like that. The crowd often drowning out the commentary, which is always fun. And, of course, the Pecorino getting win number 301 with a – is that his ninth shutout, I believe, of the year? Six. No, I'm combining here.
I
was going to say, as I said that, I was like, man, that would be really incredible. Right, six shutout. Thank you. And the Blues, of course, who are really faltering, kind of dropping like a stone down the central standings, but still – you gotta put up wins against your Central Division opponents. Really not much to say about this one. I thought it was a 100% complete effort from Nashville. It seemed like from the initial puck drop, they were on the gas. I think they put up like 10 shots on goal before St. Louis even had two. So that kind of start to the game. And getting the two goal lead early in the first is definitely always good to, as far as kind of demotivating the opponent. So Corey, anything negative to say about this game, or was kind of like me, or are you all positive about the shutout?
I'm rather positive. I just noticed in the last few games the Predators have been called for a few more penalties. I'll have to clean that up. I think there's iffy calls today, but all in all, this was a rather complete game from the entire team. Every player wound up with a Corsi for over 55% at the end of the day at 5-on-5, high danger chances 9-4. I mean, they were really executing and then really shutting down the offense for the Blues today.
Yeah, and funny you mentioned the penalties. I've noticed that Philip Forsberg seems to be making his bid for penalty minutes leader. Not sure what that's about, but I think that was his second or third game in a row taking two minor penalties. So not sure what's going on there. Like you said, some of the calls are a little iffy. I thought the calls against Nashville were fine, but I think they missed a lot of, against the Blues. So obviously didn't have a real impact in the, on the final score. George, anything negative to say about this one, or is it all, I don't even know of a phrase, all smiles. There you go.
I thought that the third pairing was a little weak at times, especially in the corners. The Predators, despite that one really good goal from Colton Sissons on the power play, their break-in looked a little weak. And I think the only time that they actually, when they did get that goal, it was because it was a broken play and the pass behind didn't work. And so they improvised and I think made a pass forward across the ice and, you know, surprise, it worked.
Right. It's not rugby. You can pass forward.
Yeah. Otherwise, I really liked it. Predators got to the high danger areas. Good for Jorn Krog to get another primary assist, and good for Hartnell to not make a kicking motion.
Right. I didn't believe that was going to count till it did. So that was nice. Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah. Good for Austin Watson too. That fourth line was on fire today. They were everywhere. I've loved Sam Mackey and Austin Watson since they were put together. But Colton Sissons has also been playing well over the past five games or so, and he was the guy that I said, you know, if and when Fisher comes back, you know, I think he should take Sissons' place. But now I'm not so sure that Fisher should be taking anyone's place. So
yeah,
I'm curious.
Not with the way they've been playing lately. And Austin Watson putting up his fourth goal out of eight total against St. Louis this year. So, and his second on the shorthanded situation. So Austin Watson really has Jake Allen's number. I really don't know why Allen didn't come out on that shot.
Yeah, that was weird.
I mean, maybe he wasn't. He didn't realize that it was Austin Watson coming at him. Because if I had, I would have been like, oh, I got. This will take ages. I can skate out and get this. I just kind of watched the puck slowly trickle closer to the crease, and I was like, where the heck is Allen? I feel like he should come out for that. And not exactly a highlight reel shot, but obviously Watson getting it done. Always nice to see. And then just to talk more about the kind of the more pressing situation is we're now within 24 hours of the trade deadline this year. Nationals made a couple moves already. Most notably, Pontus Aberg is going up to Edmonton, and Nashville gets Columbus's fourth round pick next year. So a little bit of a three-way trade action going in. Nashville now has seven draft picks next year, I believe, assuming they don't make any more moves regarding next year's draft. But as it sits now, they're set up really nicely for next year's draft, which is great. And kind of rare, I would say, for a real cup contender. And then I'm gonna have to try to pronounce these names. Is it Grosnick?
Yeah,
is that correct. Okay, Grosnick and Bolig, trading a sixth round pick. So I guess now they would have seven or six anyway. Trading a sixth round pick for Grosnick and Bolig. That one's definitely more of an AHL deal. I'm going to impact the Milwaukee Admirals much more than the Nashville Predators, you'd think. Although maybe it's, you could argue that's, they're preparing for a move that would include some AHL players, but we will see. So as it sits now, Erik Karlsson is not a member of the Nashville Predators. Rick Nash will not be a member of the Nashville Predators. Who else is out there maybe Hoffman?
Thomas Plekanec? He got moved to the...
Right.
The Maple Leafs.
Corey, I'll just ask you, and I hope that we can get this episode out before the trade deadline, but do you think any more moves are pending, or is David Poile closing the book on this one?
I'm not going to say David Poile has closed the book on this one, because we never know. I don't think he ever closes the book. I don't know if he ever will. But I don't see any real effort. After seeing that Nash trade and how much it cost for a rental, yes. Yeah. I don't think he's going to be going out there trying to add anybody at this point in time. I mean, and really, you know, I listen to Nashville radio in the mornings a good portion, and one of the shows was talking about, if you have this team and it's already the best team in the division, allegedly, of course Winnipeg's there as well, we'll talk about that later too. But if you have this team and it's already considered a really, 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 really good team, and you're looking at adding a piece that's a front line, you know, defenseman or a first line forward, why would you want to add that piece when it could just disrupt your team? You already have all this stuff built the way it is, and it's working really well right now. Why move it? So I wouldn't be surprised if another move happens, but I really think that it's move Aberg off the contract list so they can have room for Fisher to sign and move forward.
Yeah, I guess really I should mention the only other name that's really been linked with the Predators is Evander Kane, whose things have kind of gone quiet surrounding him. But I think maybe earlier today or yesterday, I saw, I can't remember if it was Drager or Kiprios or one of those guys tweeting out that name was definitely circulating around Nashville. So we'll see. Maybe a kind of a last minute trade will come for a more, and I'd say a player like Kane, obviously not just going to talk only about him, but of that kind of quality would probably fit more on the bottom six forwards, which, like you're saying, you know, the top six are I think perfectly fine. They're producing well. Doesn't seem to be any real need to add it. Even if it's a pretty good name, you might not want to fix what's not broke. So still some time left, obviously, for a big move. I don't think they'll get Carlson, although it sounds like David Poile has not been shying away from that possibility, which is great. Whether he's just driving up the price for opponents or if he was actually curious. I imagine he was legitimately trying to see about Carlson coming down to Nashville. And George, are you kind of in agreement that they're going to let things lie, or are they going to, you think they're going to really press the issue here in the last 24 hours or so?
I think they'll probably let things lie as is. I don't see them making a move. I think if they had the opportunity to get Carlson, I think they absolutely should, but it's the asking price is so much just as it is. I don't see them doing that, especially because it's definitely going to be Tolvanen or Fabro going the other way. And, you know, I don't know. That'd be a lot to ask for. I had the really dumb thought the other day of, you know, Tolvanen and Fabro just for Tavares straight up, and just have that, and then have him as a rental for a year, and then try and sign him or get him to sign as part of the deal. But, that'd be fun. Get Fiala another play driving center instead of Torres, who's kind of more of a passenger. But that's what it is. I don't know. The Predators are really high on their own prospects, and I don't blame them for it. I think Fabro's at this point more NHL ready and more valuable than Tolvanen is. I also think Fabro will probably project to be a little bit higher than Tolvanen's ceiling is, but that's just my personal preference and taste in defense. I'm a little curious. I don't know. I don't think anything happens, but I think the Predators should be heavily in on Erik Karlsson, because if he goes to Tampa, I don't know. Just call it already.
Yeah, you got to think that's a tough team to face in a 7-game series. Already pretty much the most productive offensive group, maybe Boston, but up there definitely Tampa. And adding the best defenseman in the world would certainly not hurt things over there in Tampa.
You'd have two of the top three defensemen in the world. It'd be nuts.
And Nashville obviously already has. As a lot of people are, you know, with Carlson, I think people around Nashville seem to be very hot on kind of what the team already has. I think personally you'd have to be nuts to not take a Carlson trade if it came onto your table. But I understand.
Let me ask you this. I'm asking both y'all. For Carlson, you trade Ellis, Carrier, a first and a second. What are you doing?
Corey, take over here.
Yes.
When are those first and seconds? Are you talking, I guess the second would have to be 2019 at this point in time, because I don't think they have a second next year in 2019, or should be this year. Gosh, I really like Ellis. I think he just fits the character of this team so well. And I would hate to give up a player like that, but then you're talking about, you know, the possibility of having one of the best players in the league on your roster. Could he make – I don't know if I pull the trigger, just because I know I can lock up Ellis here in the next year or two, a little bit more longer term, probably for less money. And I think he fits the character of Nashville. He fits the character of the team so well. that losing him would be a major disadvantage to the team.
Well, and now we got to discuss, how much do you think Ellis will get re-signed for?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Ellis is right now at 2.5. I would say he's, he's probably going to get, I mean, if he doesn't get like a 4.5.
Oh, no, he's getting more.
I mean, he's probably going to get more than that. I'm just, but I'm trying to think, if it, to stay here, you've got Ekholm tied up for 3.75 the next 5 years or for the next 4 years. He probably deserves a little bit more than that. Yeah, he's probably going to get closer to 5.5, 6, isn't he?
Yeah, especially if the cap it goes up the way a lot of people think it will, which is going to be $5 million this year and then possibly around the same next year. I predict Ellis is probably going to get around 6. Maybe if he hits the open market, I think he might get a little bit more. But here's the issue is, if Ellis gets 6 and PK is getting 9, Yossi's probably going to get somewhere around 9. Maybe a little less, maybe a little more. It depends if he hits the open market. And at that point, are you going to want to commit, what is that, 9 plus 8, or 9 plus 6, 15, plus another 8. Let's be conservative and say Yossi makes $8 million. That's what, like $23 million just in your top three?
Yeah, and right now all 8 defensemen are combining for $24
million. Yeah, whereas what happens to Carlson is, and this is what's going to suck, is you get him for 2 playoff runs, and then he's probably gone. Then you probably lose him.
Right, so no matter what you're, I mean, unless you sign Ellis, you're going to lose a player in 2 years anyway. 2 playoff runs. I don't know. I like the way Ellis plays. I like the way he plays with this team. You know, will he play this way on Senators team or on another team? I don't know. I just think his style and his character just matches the philosophy and the attitude of Nashville, not just the team, but the city so well. I would think he would take a little bit less money to stay here, especially if it meant keeping Yossi in line as well. I don't know. I just have a different feeling about it.
I'm definitely less eager to trade roster pieces, even for a guy like Carlson. I think my opinion of, I mean, I know Tolvanen is obviously like the forbidden fruit as far as trading away. As if you ask me, there's no value in looking back on this team in 10 years and saying, man, that team was really good for like 4 years, but they didn't win a cup. You know, it doesn't matter how good you are long term. If you're not going to win a cup, then what was really the point all along, other than providing some entertaining hockey along the way? I'd say if you have an opportunity to land a guy like Carlson, who is one of the few players that for the Nashville Predators, who are already a very good roster, one of the few players that like immediately and substantially improves their playoff their cup winning chances, I'd say go all in. As far as Ellis, I'm obviously one of these three guys. I would say Yossi, Ekholm, and Ellis. I guess Ekholm signed for a bit longer. But one of these Nashville defensemen is going to be gone in the next 3-4 years, you would have to think. I would say hang on to what you have now. Add to it if you can. If you don't have to lose a roster piece and you can really add, go for it. And I would say I'd be willing to mortgage Tolvanen, who I'm kind of like George. Yes, he's great. He's a steal at number 30, but everything you've seen from him this year has been on much bigger ice, and he is not a physical big dude. He's got a really nice shot, really good release, but you need room to get that off. Suddenly cramming him onto an NHL size rink with some very, very high quality defensemen looking right at him. I don't think Tolvanen's going to be the all-star this year that everyone seems to expect. But I could be wrong. But I would be much happier trading Tolvanen, Fabro, and maybe a second or a first for Carlson. I mean,
you'd probably have to trade a first. Like,
yeah,
it is Eric Carlson.
I would agree.
And here's the, I mean, Tampa Bay, from what I've heard, their package looks something like, their package looks something like either Braden Point or Mikhail Sergachev, Alex Radish or I think Cicerelli, and then a first on top of that. Like, there's, I don't know, there's the asking price is big, but this is the biggest fish that's ever been on the trade deadline. Like, this is the biggest get ever. And so it kind of makes a little sense. I don't know. It's kind of like the reason why the Predators made that move today with the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Oilers was not only to get rid of Auberg, but also just making sure that that Winnipeg doesn't get Mark Letestu, who they were heavily in on. And if Letestu goes to Winnipeg, that offense just automatically gets better and more defensively responsible, which is not something you want if you're going to be facing them in the playoffs at some point, which the Predators probably will. And so if you can get Carlson in Nashville, as much as he adds to your team, he also takes that away from Tampa, which, again, that won't matter till the last round, but would you rather look over and see Victor Hedman and Anton Strahlman, or would you rather look over and see Victor Hedman and Erik Karlsson?
And that's, I mean, obviously this goes without saying, but that's the other kind of angle to this. It's not necessarily what the Predators need, but what the opponent, their potential cup opponents or playoff opponents will end up with. Obviously we've seen some moves already involving teams like Toronto and Boston, who are some of the heavy hitters out east. As far as Western teams, you know, I sort of thought we'd see more of a buying mentality from St. Louis. They picked up Soshnikov maybe a week or so ago. And I would, you know, but they've lost, what, six games straight now? And they're currently out of a playoff spot.
Yeah. And they were heavily rumored to be involved with Hoffman out of Ottawa.
Right. And so I was thinking that St. Louis is really going to be the dangerous team, and is they felt like maybe they were on the cusp and they needed to make some big moves to become a real contender. And that would have obviously, you would expect that to kind of be an obstacle for Nashville, although now it's looking like maybe not. So with St. Louis out of the way, I guess we can ask, and I'll pose the question to you guys, is in the Central Division, probably looking at Winnipeg and maybe some of the teams on the cusp. George, I guess, who do you see maybe making a move in the next day from the Central Division that Nashville should really be worried about?
I don't really see the Jets making a move. Kevin Sheldayev is like known for his inability, or not his inability, his inactiveness at the trade deadline and just trading at all. I think in the 4 years they've been there, only trades he's ever made was the Meyer for Evander Kane deal that also brought I can't even remember the other players that were brought in, but it was like there were picks and prospects at the time, and that's really it. And so it kind of made sense that he was only ever after Letestu, but because it wasn't going to be a big get, like as we saw the Oilers only ever got Averick back. I don't even know who they would have gotten back from from the Winnipeg Jets, but. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see anyone. I don't see the Jets really making a trade. I also think, though, beyond the Central, you have to look at who's also gearing up. And we mentioned Ottawa earlier, but you know, guess who they just traded their number one center to? Freaking Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, right.
Derek Brassard, who puts up first line numbers, whether it's in fancy stats or just plain old, you know, normal stats. He's a first line center, and now he's going to be playing on that third line with probably Hagelin and Phil Kessel again. They're going to remake the HBK line.
Yeah, and I'd sort of slipped into I wasn't thinking a whole lot about Pittsburgh. When I think of Eastern Conference teams, I think of probably Tampa, Toronto, and Boston are kind of the front runners. All out of the Atlantic Division, but when you look at the Metro, obviously, yeah, I think the Brassard edition. Makes you take a deeper look at this Penguins team. Having a player like that on your third line is ridiculous, especially for the Penguins, who are not short on top tier centers, obviously. So I don't know. I think that now when you look at the potential of Nashville and Pittsburgh having a rematch in the Cup final, both teams have gotten better since last year, I would say. Pittsburgh, obviously, if you ask me, they're one Matt Murray injury away from being like pretty much not even worth considering. I think their goal differential is still relatively low, I think, because of how bad they had an issue with backups earlier in the year. So, Corey, do you think Pittsburgh is with the new addition, Broussard addition, do you think Pittsburgh is now kind of the front runner out east? Is it maybe most likely to meet a team like Nashville in the Cup final, or do you have your eyes still on maybe Tampa Bay or someone else?
I never count out the Pittsburgh Penguins. You just can't. I mean, I know they're down to pretty much one goalie at this point in time, but you know, at the beginning of the season, they were just horrible. Well, let's see. Their goal differential was really low. Now they're up plus 19, which is actually the best in their division. And they went on a win streak of, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games. And before that, they lost a game, won a game. They had another win streak of 4 games. So they're really 10-4 in their last 14 games. And one of those games was a shootout. One of the losses was a shootout. So really, they've been playing really good hockey for the last several weeks, ever since we got to February. And coming on strong in the second half of the season, you just can't discount that team from anything when it comes to playoff time. Now, does that mean they're going to sweep everything all the way to the Stanley Cup final? No. Toronto's still pretty good. Boston's gotten a lot better. Philadelphia's come out of nowhere, and they're now second in their division. It's going to be a dogfight in the East.
Yeah, I was talking about Philadelphia quite recently, actually, because they're just the strangest team as far as consistency. It's like they'll win 10 straight and then lose 10 straight immediately after. But so I was a little surprised to see them climbing so high in the Metro, sitting second right now with a game in hand on Pittsburgh. And the Metro it's spreading out a little bit, but you still just got like a 10-point gap between first and fifth in the Metro. The Atlantic is set. It's Tampa, Toronto, and Boston, and then you expect 5 teams to come out of the Metro because the rest of the Atlantic is pretty bad. A team that I would think maybe as far as trade deadline is concerned, I think – I don't know. I wonder if you would see anything from Minnesota or Dallas, who are now with the Blues kind of crashing and burning. The Wild and Stars are up there now in the conversation. But you got to think, when you look at those rosters – compare them to like the Jets and the Predators, for example, you got to think that they need to add some pieces if they really plan to go far. So George, do you think maybe a team like that would make some moves? Obviously maybe not such a high profile move as a Carlson or a Hoffman or those types, but maybe something to bolster these rosters before tomorrow afternoon.
Dallas was originally reported to be in on Rick Nash, and the move was kind of there. He played under Ken Hitchcock, who's the coach now, back when he was when Hitchcock was the coach back over in Columbus. Otherwise, I think that was kind of the only one that Dallas was in on. I don't think they have a ton of cap room to make moves with, and I think if anything, they need defense. Their offense is still prolific. Otherwise, I know that the Minnesota Wild were making moves today. They waived Chris Stewart, who I think is an NHL player. You know, he's a third liner, fourth liner at best, but he's still an NHL player. But that was mostly to bring in like Luke Kunin and Colin Greenway after their college years, or after — I know Greenway's in college. I think Kunin's still in the NHL, but to bring them up once the postseason started. Colin Greenway was just part of the USA Olympic team, and I thought he was fine, at least. You know, it wasn't great, but I think he'll probably do okay on a third or fourth line this season in the NHL. So I think that the Wild are more committed to promoting from within, which is smart. That Parise and Suter contract are just killing them, so I don't really think they have a ton of money to move around at the moment.
And I don't know. I would say I think as a person who follows the Predators primarily, I've really only been paying attention to the Jets. In the Central, Corey, do you think that — I guess the main concern I've had, and the reason I tend to be overly critical of some of the perceived weaknesses from this Predators team, is I'm just very worried that they'll get to the postseason, which obviously is what they've kind of been waiting for all year, and then kind of crash and burn and really be upset early on in the first couple of rounds. So at this point, do you see Nashville do you think that they're turning it on at the right time of the year, or are they still a little too inconsistent to predict how deep they're going to run? Obviously, we're kind of taking a very deep run for granted here, and that's not something you should always rely on. But I guess, how far do you see this Predators team going with the current roster?
Well, now that they've turned the proverbial switch on, I mean, that's what we heard for the last that during that stretch of overtime games where everything was just kind of mediocre. Even Chris Mason was, you know, saying on broadcast, yeah, they get to that third period and they can just flip the switch. I'm like, I hate that thing. I hate that phrase because you shouldn't just flip a switch. But apparently they flipped whatever switch is there and yeah. Decided the last couple of games to play real team hockey. Like, you know, they're shutting down the slots a little bit better. They're getting everybody to contribute, getting to the net and shooting and trying to get in the high danger areas and converting. They, they're doing pretty well. I think they're geared up for a deep run if they can keep Pekka Rinne and UC Saros from having to save them every game. The thing is, you're going to face a team like the Winnipeg Jets that are just phenomenal at scoring and getting into those areas. So, you know, and I look to the Jets, I wouldn't be surprised if they made some sort of move for some extra defense. I don't know if they really need that much defense. They're getting some great goaltending as well, but I think they're set. I think the Preds are set for that run to the Stanley Cup final again this year. If they can get by Winnipeg, that's my main focus right now. I think they'll be in good shape.
Yeah, obviously, I guess the team that we're just really not doing any service to right now is Vegas, who currently leading the Western Conference, and you'd think that alone should make them kind of the hill that Nashville needs to climb. But I don't know. Maybe I'll say this to my grave. I'm just not convinced by Vegas. They seem to have all the production that they need, and all the numbers say they're great. But I feel like in a playoff race, maybe not so much.
Well, and the thing with Vegas is they've got great goaltending from Marc-Andre Fleury. Yeah, I mean, he's going to be, and they score a lot. And I mean, they've played really great. They've played good hockey almost all season long, and it's been a spectacular story. At some point in time, I'll be using that phrase all day long, haven't I? At some point in time, the Magic's, I think, is going to wear off. I think when it comes playoff time, they're going to get tested a little bit more. And I think a team like Winnipeg or Nashville. I mean, I really think it comes down to three teams in the West. It's going to be Vegas, Winnipeg, and Nashville. I think those are the three teams to look at. Only reason why I say we focus on Winnipeg right now because is we have three games left with them on the season, and that's going to be crucial for any hopes of getting home ice of any sort when it comes to the last two rounds of the playoffs. In the for the conference final and for the semifinals.
Yeah, and I didn't realize. I thought maybe one or two. I didn't realize they still had to play them three times. And the home ice advantage, I think, would on its own make this year's playoffs have a completely different identity from last year. I mean, there's just no doubt that Nashville plays better at home. They seem completely unbeatable at home. So it would be very interesting to see them have that advantage throughout. Hopefully in the deeper playoff run they'll make. George, are we wrong about not giving Vegas any respect, as it were? Or do you think that they're the real deal or not?
I don't know anymore. I feel so beaten and bruised by this team. I don't know. I thought I knew something about hockey, and then I watched these guys play and win. I don't think they're going to get anyone, but. You know, as I look over all the picks and prospects that they have, you know who they would, who they could sign, as well as, the cap space that they have, a certain Erik Karlsson.
Yeah.
And I'm a little surprised that they wouldn't go all in on him, but I wonder, George McPhee hasn't really tipped his hand about what he is. Are they real playoff contenders? Are they just going to go in and, play with house money, or are they going to try to rebuild? And clearly, at this point in time, I don't think they're going to try and rebuild because they haven't traded anyone away. And especially, I imagine you could fetch a pretty penny for guys like Erik Haula, Cody Eakin, Riley Smith, or even like William Karlsson. Oh my God, that guy. yeah. Otherwise, I guess they're just going to play with house money, which I don't think is the right move. If you're going to go to the playoffs and try to win, especially when you're in first place in your division. Just because, well, I think I've said this before, but, you know, cup windows are fleeting, and you have to strike while the iron's hot, and the iron can go cold surprisingly fast. You know, just talk to Chicago about that.
Yeah, same with me as far as just, like, kind of shaking my head at this team. I keep waiting for the bottom to drop out, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to. I think, honestly, their very convincing success is actually the worst thing that could have happened to them. I think everyone was expecting them to be pretty weak, and then be able to kind of establish the fan base and then start building a team and maybe use, you know, be a buyer. But now they're very much not. They've kind of just flipped that entire narrative. I think if I, George McPhee, kind of like you, I would be selling. I would say, you know what, this is a taste of what's to come, but I don't think we have the roster yet. They, like you said, I mean, as far as doing a rebuild or I guess a build, as it were, they pretty much already have the pieces. They have tons of draft picks coming up and high draft picks as well. But I would, yeah, would not be the fan favorite move out there, but I would say, you know, this is a taste of what's to come in a few years. We're going to try this again with a much stronger roster top to bottom and really go for it. But it seems like they're just going to keep riding this wave as long as it'll take them.
Also, why would they help out the Penguins like they did?
Oh, my God, I know.
They took $2 million on Derek Brassard for 2 years. Yeah. Why would you do that?
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, sort of like Arizona helping Chicago out. It's just some of these teams, everyone just lines up to give a hand, and it's infuriating for everyone else. But anyway, I still think, Nashville and Vegas have had some, like, truly epic games this year. It's proven that they can be a very tough opponent for the Predators, but I still just, again, the way Nashville's been playing recently, it's hard to imagine anyone beating them in a 7-game series, let alone the expansion team, right? So, anyway, I'm feeling much better. Pretty much 2 weeks ago, if you had asked me about these playoffs, I was still probably thinking maybe a second-round exit for Nashville. But, I mean, with the wins against the Sharks and the Blues, if you play like that against anyone, I mean, you're not going to win by 4 to 6 goals, but I think you're going to win a whole lot of hockey games. So I'm feeling much better about the Predators' chances lately, and hopefully they'll kind of continue this trend. Although I'm with you, Corey, I don't really like the notion of waiting until a certain point of the season to actually start playing. But it seems like maybe getting in as the 8th seed and then making it to the Cup final is the worst thing for them, because now they're like, well, what does the regular season even matter? Just got to fall into the playoffs and make it happen there. But if it works, it works. You can't criticize it, really. So I guess just to sum up as far as the trade deadline, I don't think any of us are really expecting Nashville to make a big move before tomorrow afternoon. It wouldn't. I mean, I guess we've been surprised before. Poyle seems to be, you know, as much as I make fun of people for kind of taking it a little too far, I think he is a very good GM. I don't understand the wizardry that people for pretty much every small step he takes, it's like people freak out. But that said, he's proven that he can make these very good deals pretty late on, so maybe we'll see it. As it stands, I think Nashville has the pieces they need to win. Although Pittsburgh, as we've discussed, has recently made themselves a much stronger opponent, so we'll see. Wouldn't it just be awesome to lose in the Cup final to the freaking Penguins again, huh? Mostly, I just don't want to be denied the chance of the Tampa Predator series, which is what I've been waiting for literally all year, is that Cup final series between the Lightning and Preds. As far as I guess there's still a lot of regular season hockey left to play. As far as the upcoming week, it's a pretty long road trip for Nashville. Lots of traveling up in Winnipeg on Tuesday. That is definitely a game to watch. Certainly the two Central Division front runners and really the two of the front runners from the whole Western Conference facing off. And then over to the Oilers on Thursday, so get to see the return of Pontsager to the ice against Nashville. In Vancouver on Friday, and then in Colorado on Sunday. So as far as this Jets game, I would predict I'm gonna be the buzzkill here and say Winnipeg wins this one, you know, along the lines of 3-1 or 4-2. Corey, what do you think?
I'm actually probably going to go along with you on that one and say they actually win 4-3 in a shootout.
Oh, man. Go all in on the prediction. I like it.
Yeah, their offense is just their offenses are good, and they play extremely well at home.
Yeah. And George, what do you think about this Jets matchup?
I actually have 3-2 in overtime for the Jets.
My gosh, you guys are like really into the specific predictions. Okay.
I don't know. Whatever. I like the Jets more, I guess. I think Pecorino's been playing very well recently, and I don't necessarily think he's going to give up more than 2 or 3 goals. But I've been very wrong before, yeah. So who knows?
Every time I think of Winnipeg, I just think of like massive players, and I don't know if this is factually true, but it seems like they probably have the biggest roster in the NHL. I feel like that might be true. I may have seen that. When you watch them play, they just look enormous. And when Nashville lets themselves get into the physical chippy games, they tend to not win them. I liked against St. Louis, who tends to be more physical. Today they just ignored that entire aspect of the game and kind of skated circles around him, and I hope that maybe they'll do that against the Jets, but the Jets are, I would say, objectively a much stronger opponent than St. Louis, so we'll see. That is a very important game to win, I would say, not so much as the next two, which obviously later on, closer to the playoffs, but anytime you face your divisional rival, especially on their ice, I mean, that's a huge, huge game as far as implications on the postseason, so I hope Nashville can pull it off. An overtime loss would not be the worst thing in the world. Grabbing a point on the road, especially looking down the road on this series of games. I mean, the Jets are easily the strongest opponent they'll play this week. So even an overtime loss would be okay there. Next up in Edmonton on Thursday night, the Oilers just I guess they've been playing better lately, but I mean they've missed their chance this year for sure. So. McDavid will be angry and playing well. Talbot's been all right lately, I think. I actually don't know that. I'm a Talbot fan now because of his statement on goaltender interference, which I can't repeat on this podcast. But Corey, your prediction for this Oilers matchup?
My prediction is that we see Mike Fisher play real hockey for the first time with the fourth line. How did I even
forget about that?
Play with a fourth line. It's going to be Salamaki. No, it's going to be, excuse me, it's going to be Sissons, Fisher, and Watson on that third line, or fourth line, excuse me. We're going to see him play against Edmonton.
Wow. I completely spaced on that possibility. I think that Fisher's first game will probably be a home game, and I just think that he'll feature as a bit of a service to the fans, and then maybe they'll realize that Sissons is a little better. But that's just me being cynical, probably, and still not a huge fan of the Fisher thing. Of course, he hasn't been signed yet. He's technically not been signed yet.
So he's got a couple hours left. But no, I mean, this should be the Oilers are 3-7 in their last 10. They should. The Predators, the way they're playing right now, if they take that on the road with them, they should win this game, you know, 4-2. It should be a really good game. We'll see Saros in net. So it should be a good game for them.
I'm just thinking of how funny it would be if Fisher gets signed and then Ottawa offers him like a ridiculous amount of money just to come retire there, and then he like gets signed but actually doesn't play in Nashville. Man, I'm a hateful person, I think. Mm. George, your thoughts on the Edmonton game?
Probably going to be McDavid just hating life and taking it out on the Predators. Yeah, I just remember last time how he made Matthias Ekholm looked like a little kid twice. Yeah.
And then does not happen often.
No. So that was when he was just, you know, content with life, and he was thinking about that $12 million he's going to make next year. And so now I think he uses some of that anger to push his way, maybe score a few more goals. I still think the Predators win, but you know, it's not going to be easy.
Scott Hartnell today on the post-game interview was suggesting that Auberg would be featured on the in the top six up in Edmonton, which I think is pretty funny to think of Pontus Auberg. No disrespect to him. He just doesn't really produce well. It'd be interesting to see him on a top six pairing, especially if he could play up with McJesus over there. I think you might start seeing a little more production out of Pontus Auberg.
It's what is it? It's the Neil Yakupov effect, where they had Neil Yakupov play with McDavid for like the first 20 games. I think Yakupov had like 16 points in 20 games.
Right.
It was incredible. And we're like, oh, so that's how good McDavid is.
Yeah. He has a knack for shooting the puck off of his teammates' sticks.
Yeah. It's a good way to put it.
I would say, I'm just going to go all in and say the Nashville wins this game 5-0. I don't trust the Oilers at all. Anger doesn't usually translate to good results on the ice, and this is a very angry team. Nashville's playing so well. I think the outcome of the Jets game will probably affect their performance somewhat in Edmonton. But I'm setting myself up here to be very wrong, but I don't think the Oilers even sniff this game. And hopefully I'm correct about that. The next night on Friday, they're in Vancouver facing the Canucks. I believe they won the last matchup 7-2 or 7-1, something along those lines. And of course, PK Subban scoring from center ice, which was certainly memorable. The Canucks are a team that I just, I never really think very much about. George, you tend to be a little more plugged into the Pacific Division. Do you know anything about this Canucks team other than they're not great?
Well, they're really not great.
Okay.
Yeah, Brock Besser is Brock Besser, so...
Right. You
know, and I believe that they will have Bo Horvat as well as Sven Berchi this time around. And so those are two top six players for him. So it probably won't be as easy. The Canucks won't roll over as easily as they did last time, but... That's a game that the Predators should win, even if they're on the road. Even on the second half of the back-to-back.
Yeah, it would be a big disappointment if they didn't. I'll say that much. Corey, why don't you give me a too specific prediction on this one?
Vancouver with the upsets. The two things in this game that we have to watch out for is Predators on a back to back. They didn't play very well the second and third period versus Detroit earlier this week, coming off back to back. And then the Canucks have 2 days off before this game, so they're going to be a little bit more rested. Are they still going to have Thomas Vonek? Is he still going to be on the team? He's traded.
Vonek will be there. I'm pretty sure he won't be traded.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, there's some speculation, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, this should be another game, probably a lot like what we saw against the Red Wings earlier this week. Maybe a little bit of struggle at time, but the Predators should come out with a win.
I seem to recall around this time last year, I don't remember exactly when it was, Nashville went on a very long road trip, like a 3-4-game road trip, and just put up some huge results, and it kind of defined it really cemented their placement as a playoff team. So I'm hoping that this, obviously they're very much a playoff team already, but hopefully they can just get a ton of results on this road trip and be very comfortably atop of the Central by the end of it. Finally wrapping up with second Central Division matchup of this road trip, in Denver. The Avs showed a little bit of signs of life a little while ago. Lately, they've fallen back off. Currently sixth in the Central. Although I guess all things considered, they're not really out of it yet. The only team that's really out of it, I would say, is the Blackhawks, as we all predicted. Corey, your thoughts on this Avalanche matchup? It seems like it's Colorado might, on occasion, have Nashville's number. So I wouldn't ignore this one. But maybe you think differently.
No, I don't ignore it. I mean, they're 28-1 at home. So, I mean, they play really well in Denver. That's where obviously that's where the game is. It's coming up. So I don't put anything past them. But again, now the switch is flipped with the Predators. Is it staying on, or are we going to have a little bit of an outage sometime during this trip? Colorado's playing well. They play well at home. I don't put anything past them, but this should be another good win for the Predators. And that, that's always what we want to see. So this should come out with a win on this one.
Yeah, I would think so.
And shout out to you for saying the Blackhawks are in last place.
Yeah, well, I don't like to dwell on it too much because, frankly, I just would rather ignore the Blackhawks. But every now and then when I pull up the standings and I see them just well behind, you know, it does the heart good. Certainly won't. You know, they got their three cups, but so no criti- I can't really criticize them too much, but it's nice to see them kind of slipping away into the sunset.
Mm.
George, you think the Avs surprise everyone? Or, yeah, right, exactly. Think the Avs surprise us, or does Nashville get things done?
Through Nate McKinnon, all things are possible. So, I think the Predators win it. Well, actually, no. I think the Predators lose it. One after three games on the road, after pretty much just a week on the road, I think that's going to be very taxing. I think that makes five games in 7 days, including today. So I think the Predators are worn out by then. And I think I think the Avalanche probably overtake them. It'll be a hard-fought game, but yeah. That's just my two cents.
Yeah. I guess we better wrap up. We're a little over time here, but I'll let everyone plug themselves. So, Corey, where can we find you online?
You can find me, obviously, with Predlines. I do several articles. I also do a lot of the tweeting. So if you like the tweets, hey, thanks for that. I like to argue with you about if we dip fries and Frosties and put pepperoni and pineapple on pizza. That's fun. Oh. We've had some of those conversations today. Also, J. Corey Francis on Twitter, J. Corey Francis on Instagram, and also my own website, jcoreyfrancis.com.
All right. Then, George, what about you?
Find me on Twitter at GeorgeM1019. Michael always says I don't need to, but the G and the M are capitalized, as always. Otherwise, you can find me on Breadlines, and it's pretty fun.
Yeah. As for myself, you can find me on Twitter at WadeM1994.
Wadem.
There it is. You got to be quicker on that. Every time I think you're going to forget. Obviously, you can find me on Predlines.com. Been a little thin on that lately, being traveling around, but planning to get back on board pretty soon. As for the Predlines podcast, feel free to find us on iTunes or wherever you listen and give us a rating. We would certainly appreciate any feedback and a rating you might provide. So other than that, maybe see you next week. And thanks, as always, guys.
Thanks, everyone.